All year round, Frontier Home Products and Design has what you need to make your home comfortable and beautiful. Relax on a new Timber Tech deck designed by Frontier's experts. A new fireplace from Frontier Home Products Fireplace Gallery adds warmth and serenity to any home. Beauty and versatility at Frontier Home Products and Design Center, 4213 Peachtree, 5th next to the Bayfront Highway.
Frontier Home Products and Design Center. Discover a new frontier.
PA contractor number PA039007.
I'm Jody Crumpy, director of the Erie City Mission Thrift Stores and Donation Center. When you shop at one of our two thrift stores or drop off items at our donation center, you are providing a meal, you are housing a man in our shelter, helping men and women overcome addiction, and giving our inner city youth an opportunity to learn. I want to thank you for making a difference. This is our city, our mission. God bless you.
Welcome to TalkErie.com's Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast. Every day, we tackle the biggest issues that the Erie, PA region faces. Stay informed and involved as we advance the narrative of Erie. Now, here's Joel Natale.
We want to welcome to the microphone here, Liz Allen, the former city council president. And Liz, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it here.
Thanks for having me, Joel. It's been a few years.
Yes.
We had a fun breaking the ice kind of conversation before the show started, and we were talking about Philadelphia. And believe it or not, I thought that that might be a way, if it's okay,
yeah,
to get into what we're going to talk about today. And I'm going to explain why.
Yeah, please.
How some of the things might have impacted my decision to leave City Council. Am I okay?
Yeah, we're dealing with technical stuff. Sorry.
You're doing
about
the technical stuff. Yeah. Okay, so Joel was urging his colleague, saying, hey, you got to get to Philadelphia sometime.
Exactly.
So I'm going to tell you a Philadelphia story, and it has to do with basketball, because I looked at your website before I came, and I saw that the top sports story was that St. John's had beat UConn in the Big East. So
that's kind of a big deal.
It is a big deal, except that Marquette just beat UConn also. So anyhow,
you're insufferable when it comes to Marquette, right?
Yes, and when it comes actually kind of to sports. So I'm at a Marquette-Villanova game. I forget how many years ago this was. This is before Villanova won the national championship, before they had that great run. And we're at the, whatever it was called then, it might have been Wachovia Center. Their arena has gone through, you know, a whole bunch of name changes. I was getting nervous during basketball. I was with my husband. I was with my old college roommate and her husband. I'm like, well, I'm going to go change seats. As if that could impact the outcome of the game. Marquette was winning, but I was afraid they were going to lose. So I went and I sat next to some other Marquette fans. And I was talking to this young woman, and I said, you know, we saw them play in West Virginia, at West Virginia. And I said, they lost, but they still look pretty good. The West Virginia fans were very nice to me. And she said, where are you from that you went to see them play in West Virginia, and now you're in Philadelphia? And I said, I'm from Erie. There's 16,000 people at this game. And she said, I'm from Erie.
Oh my God,
what are the chances that I would sit next to a Marquette fan who also told me she had gone to Villa, and she, her name is Maria, and I'm going to goof up her last name. Her dad is Barney, who used to have the sausage shack at the Seawolves.
Oh, sure.
So, anyhow, so we became, you know, Facebook friends and everything. And I'm telling you that story because it is how I made my decision to leave city council. One of the factors was, what am I good at? And what do I struggle with? And one of the things I'm good at is making connections with people. In this odd way, too, my boss at the newspaper used to laugh. He's like, how do you always find people from Erie? I mean, I was at a Notre Dame game, a football game a few years ago, and I saw somebody in front of me with a Because You Care shirt and GE on his T-shirt, and I tapped him on the back. Are you from Erie? Yeah, I'm from Erie. But the one at the Villanova game was really weird that I sat next to somebody from Erie. You said I'm insufferable when it comes to Marquette. I went to a Marquette, like, J school reunion, people from all years. And I met, somebody told me I should go talk to this guy. His name is James Murtaugh. So, of course, I wonder where I said, are you related to Danny Murtaugh, who is the Pirates manager? No, but I get that question all the time. But I'm married to an Erie girl. This is this character actor who's like probably in his mid-80s or something.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she grew up on, I think, on Mohawk. Anyhow, so I'm good at making connections with people. And that was one of the things I came to realize, that the fraying of those connections, the, you know, always having to be, not everybody, but a lot of people thinking of politics or public service as a game, I just wasn't comfortable with it. And I also like to make sure that things are accurate. So I'm going to give you another Philadelphia reference. Yeah. Do you watch Abington Elementary? We were talking about...
I have it, but
anyhow,
they win all the awards.
It won all the awards. So the young actress who developed the show, she was on the Colbert Show recently, and she was talking about Philly-isms, or I don't know if that was the right word, but, you know, like cheesesteak, things that are unique to Philly. And then she said to Colbert, "Now, do you know what a Mac machine is?" And he's like, "No." And she said, "Well, we only had them in Philadelphia, you know, ATM machines." I'm like, "No, we had Mac machines in Erie." I mean, it was just like a minor thing, but, you know, I realized I was wired as a journalist and not as somebody who would, I don't want to say make compromises, but kind of sell my soul in a way. Mm. I also wanted to say I am not the first or the last retired journalist who thinks that we can make a contribution by serving in elected office. A friend of mine from college, he worked at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which is also owned by Gannett, as is the Erie Times News. And they have they had a much bigger news staff than the Erie Times News ever had.
Right.
So many people have been let go. They did a story about the former Journal Sentinel staffers who had run for public office in Wisconsin, and there were a bunch of them. And, a friend of mine who from the newspaper who had left years ago had run for a school board seat. And he said to me, he's the one who used those words, "We aren't really wired for this," because he was objecting when they wanted to, you know, meet an executive session over something that wasn't executive session.
You're predisposed to the idea of transparency as a journalist.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were some things where I think I spoke up in a good way. And I'm going to give you one example. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember this, but the city was getting $100,000.
Okay. Uh-oh. Sorry about that. That's
the on-air sign just fell over. Uh-oh.
We are still on the air. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. That was a little scary.
Yeah.
Anyhow, the city was getting a $100,000 anonymous contribution. And I kept pressing the administration, "Well, where's this money coming from?" And other council members were like, "We should just be grateful. $100,000, that's great." My concern was, if somebody's giving you $100,000, are they expecting something in return?
Sure.
And I was not the one that had to press that forward. It was actually, I think, Kevin Flowers filed a right-to-know request, and we found out it was Erie Insurance. I mean, it was ultimately a good thing. I think it was $100,000 to pay for motorcycles or something.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But it was always hard for me to realize that people weren't wired to think about the need for transparency everywhere. And there was another example was when, now, City Council will tomorrow night formally accept my resignation. They have 30 days to fill the seat. We had that situation twice while I was on council. One was when Bob Mirsky was elected as a state rep and we had to fill his seat, and then when Kaz Kwiatkowski was elected as city treasurer. And the first time, we had a lot of people who applied, and I looked at what other councils were doing, because there are other places where someone might die or quit or, you know, take a new job or something. Transfer to a different city. And they had all done interviews. I kept saying, "We need to really do interviews." And so we had a format where it was actually, I was thinking, it was sort of like maybe like ranked choice voting, if you think about it. I'm not exactly sure, but it was, you know, you had
you could vote up to six people.
But then I walked in and they said, well, no, you can actually cast all your votes, all six of your votes for one person. I was like, well, that's not what the paper said originally that we got. And I kept objecting to it. And I lost. I mean, I lost the argument. But the next time we did it, I said, one vote, one person, you know. Mm-hmm. We still ended up with two former council members on there, Curtis Jones and then David Brennan. So it may have worked out that way anyhow. But I kept thinking, how could you cast, like, six votes for one person when the original rule said you could vote for up to like six people and then the city clerk would take them and tally them and come back. And it was, you know, you gradually
this is
narrowed
how they,
it down.
You know, this is how they choose the Pope, right? I mean,
yes, that might have been one.
Did you have any white smoke coming out of the fifth floor?
I don't know. I felt like I didn't want it to be, decided ahead of time before people send in their resumes in full faith that they were going to get a shot at doing this. I think it was the second time we had an opening. Somebody I know who's I consider a friend asked me if I wanted to go to breakfast or lunch or something. And I said, you know, how come? Right. Oh, we just haven't had a chance to talk for a while. Well, I don't think we had ever gone to breakfast or lunch before. I mean, I consider him a friend, but not in my immediate circle. And we sat down and he said, does anybody owe you any political favors or do you have any? I'm like, what? And he had a candidate he wanted that second time around. I was like, political favors? No, I don't owe any. I don't have any political favors. And
Liz, you know what the environment, I'm not saying that you necessarily walked into, but the context of Erie City Hall the decades,
yes,
it is fiefdoms and you know who does what and you know the big and, you know Tulia was the last of the big city bosses.
Yeah,
you know,
you are right. And but you come in and you think maybe it can be different this time.
Sure.
You are exactly right. And one of the things I've been thinking about even is, you know, if somebody came from somewhere else. You have so much partisanship everywhere, and you would think, okay, you know, here's the legislators fighting with the executive, and they're all from the same political party, you know? But it's all like, okay, how can I advance my power? How can I get ahead? How can I maybe get to the fifth floor? And you're right, I should have thought about that, but I think it was easier for me when Kathy Schoff was on council with me. I did not know Kathy. I didn't think I knew her, but when we went to the courthouse and they pull the, was it like the ping pong balls or something, and you find out where you are on the ballot.
Yeah,
Kathy, that first time we ran, and she only ran the first time, she didn't run the second time. She walked out and she said, "Liz, you wrote a column about me about a walk I did for breast cancer funds." And I used to joke that at some point I thought I would write a column about everybody in Erie. I mean, I would find people and said, you know, you wrote about me. And I kind of forgot about it. So we weren't friends, except for the fact that I had interviewed her, you know, years before that. But I found that having another newcomer on council was really a good thing for me to have in those first 4 years. We didn't always agree on everything. We didn't always vote the same way. But it is, and I think maybe you were talking about, going back to our conversation before we came on the air, you were talking about women working in particular jobs and everything. And I think for women, especially making a career change at my age, it helps to have somebody there that you can kind of, not cry on their shoulder, but have some kind of support. And I think that, you know, some of my friends before I actually decided to run for city council, they're like, well, you know, is your skin thick enough? Can you do this? And I think I have thick skin, but once I was on council and I didn't have Kathy Schoff, David Brennan, I didn't know really as a friend either. We're both on the board of Preservation Erie, but I would count on him to look at things the way I like to look. I mean, he's an architect, so he's more about like building the pieces. So I missed having them on council.
So would you say that in this latter era that you felt a bit marginalized, even as you were president of council?
I did. And I things would happen that I would be like, maybe it was like I wasn't tuned in enough to know what it was that I was going to irk somebody with. I want to give you a really weird example.
Yeah.
When we had disagreements on council about adding additional police, and I was a skeptic when the administration first presented that proposal. That was under the previous council. You know, I was worried about what are our long-term financial obligations. And I tell people that when Antonio Yarger Jr. got shot in the head, you were talking earlier about Philadelphia, and I would, if you, as I do, I look at the Philadelphia Inquirer every day. Every day there's a shooting of a young person, or there sometimes three, four shootings a night. That made me say I need to listen to what the police have to say. Mm-hmm. There's an issue here that we need to address, and we ought to give this a chance to see if it works. So, but I was also trying to be cognizant of the fact that we had a large number of people who still thought that police community relations were not as good as they should be. I had seen actual improvement. I had gone to the truth building sessions, truth sharing, whatever, at the schools where the police would be there and young people would be there, and they would have these honest, frank conversations. And I really do believe that things have improved there. So my idea on the police was we need to add additional officers and continue to work on improving those police community relations. So our West Bayfront has those signs, a safe community begins with me. Mm-hmm. So I brought it with me because I thought going forward that the new district attorney had been talking about using video cameras in neighborhoods to improve safety. If we had her come in and talk about that, if the police chief came, you know, every couple of weeks to a council meeting.
And this is to be able
meeting.
To pass that ordinance to right. expand it, police.
Right. So I had the sign, and I was going to show a safe community begins with me. I thought if we all embrace that idea, think of what we might be able to achieve. Well, one of the people on council said, you can't take that out there. That's a placard. That's a prop. You aren't allowed to do that. And he actually went to the city solicitor to say, she can't take that out there as a prop. Well, we have the rules about no props. I wasn't doing it. I had already told people when I ran for council again, I wasn't doing it again. I mean, I had no intention of running for a third term. I wasn't trying to agitate for a particular political cause. I just wanted people to see this is what they're doing in our West Bayfront. I was like astounded that I had somehow cross the line by bringing in this sign. A safe community begins with me.
Hang on to that thought. We've got to take our first break. Liz Allen, the former city council president, is with us. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Our crucial conversation is with Liz Allen, the former city council president. And Liz, I have to ask you, as I'm writing down, and again, I don't know if I even need to be here. You're kind of on a riff. It's so awesome. But when you made this decision to leave, and you've already referred to it a couple times here, but did you do a cost-benefit analysis? Because here's my editorial comment, and I am an opinion journalist, so I get to weigh in, right?
Okay.
You're so additive to the conversation. Even though you ruffle feathers or you're a disruptor, it's not like what you're coming up with is that crazy woman kind of thing. It's actually substantive and needs to be considered. You do your homework. You bring your charts and graphs. You know what I mean? And so, you know, even as things got tough and you started getting isolated, didn't you see the benefit of your efforts to the greater good, I guess?
I did, and that's a really good question. So when I tell people that, I think what was the last time I was on here was all those years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, oh, you Republicans or something.
You
I just thought
totally
that was
did.
Funny. And then you kept us on for another half hour.
Yeah, we might have to do that again.
But one of the things, I talked about my New Year's resolutions. You know,
yeah.
One of the things was trying to do a better job in praying. So I did not take this lightly. And the cost-benefit analysis to me was, is there a way I can do those kinds of things that isn't in council? And I don't know what that might be. I know I've talked to some people, like, do you write like a Substack thing or
yeah.
something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is the media landscape out there? Is there like a newsletter or something? So I think that was part of my analysis of the cost benefit. And
that
I
maybe
did,
there's another lane for you to swim in.
Yes,
you
and you talked about being an opinion journalist. And that is actually one of the things that I was doing at the newspaper, like a long time before I left. People might have thought, I had a Sunday column, people might have thought that's all I did. That was like the last thing I did, because we had an editorial board. We had editorials every day except Mondays when we did those thumbs up letters, which were basically, you know, people were always writing in thanking people for, you know, coming to a bake sale or helping somebody who was sick or something. And on Saturdays, we had the thumbs up and thumbs down, little short
right.
little editorials. Well, as the newspaper staff shrunk, not as much as obviously it had now, more and more of the editorial writing became my obligation. So there was no Liz Allen name on it, but I was writing all those editorials. And one of the things when I was figuring out what I wanted to say, depending on what happened at that council vote that morning, was I went back and looked. We used to do an agenda at the newspaper every year, a community agenda. And I went back and I looked at something, and I had written all of them. Sometimes I think my name would be at the bottom. Sometimes mm-hmm. it wasn't. I looked at something, and it was 2010 community agenda. You know, go back and read the Bosworth report. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm always like saying, go read this. Please go read this. And that was why I had been urging city council members to go read that public financial management report, because there are so many good recommendations in there about how to tackle the structural deficit. And
we've got to go to break at the bottom of the hour, but I'm so glad you brought that up, because when we come back, we need to talk about sometimes council's not up to the challenge of being curious enough about how government works. It's Talk Erie and the Joel Natale Show. Liz, I want to get right back to that concept that we had before the news so rudely interrupted us. And this idea of being prepared for where Erie needs to go. And my question to you is, and I'm not doing this to throw anybody under the bus, but in my opinion, there needs to be more rigorous wrestling with Erie's fundamental issues. Is council up to that challenge?
That's a really good question. And I think it will depend on possibly people from the outside pressing council to be up to that challenge.
There's no doubt.
And in the break, you were talking about Erie Refocused.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a book club with some women after I left the newspaper. And we were reading nonfiction. We read Evicted, which I think was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. It was about what was happening in Milwaukee, where I had gone to school, with evictions and how that, the constant disruption in young kids' lives was, you know, it affected everything. It affected
sure.
their schoolwork. We read Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson. He's spoken in Erie. He was, saving some people from in sort of an innocence project type of thing from the death penalty. And we read Erie Refocused. And so I said, I don't know that there were too many people that read Erie Refocused. But
at their book club, especially.
At a book club, yeah. But one of the things that you and I talked about before we came back on the air was I mentioned that Charles Bukey was also a consultant in Corey, and I was out there a couple of months ago and did a story about what Corey has done with Bukey's recommendations. Corey had has a municipal airport, which, my God, how did I not know this?
Right.
But they created an airport authority so that wouldn't be a drain on the city budget. They had one municipal golf course, and they created a golf commission so that wouldn't be a drain on the budget. And so I was like, here's smaller Corey, which is a city like the city of Erie, but wrestling with a lot of the same problems and some additional problems too. I mean, you have one, the plastics industry there had lost a lot of jobs. You have some transportation issues. But they seemed like they took those recommendations seriously. And I think, go back and read Erie Refocused. And then I kept urging council members, because we have new people on council who weren't on board when we got the PFM report, mm-hmm. which has a lot of good but recommendations that are going to require guts to enact. I'm going to talk about LURDA. It was one of the things, the mayor and I had, I disagreed with the mayor. I was concerned about giving LURDA for 10 years, full LURDA. The reason I was concerned is because I was at a meeting where Brian Polito, the school superintendent, said that the school district had lost money on LURDA, on previous LURDA programs.
Absolutely.
Because after the LURDA expired, the LURDA recipients would go to the assessment board and appeal their new assessments. It's like, well, wait a minute, I thought they were supposed to be bringing in more money. LURDA's going to be there for, I forget what year it's going to expire. And we have to be able to, that was one of the recommendations in that PFM report, is to look and see, do some data analysis. Has LURDA worked? Where has it worked? Where has it not worked? So really, I think, interesting idea of looking at, I think that they recommended this. We have the Erie Water Work or Erie Water Authority, and we have a sewer authority. The sewer authority is just a financing authority. It doesn't make decisions on rate increases or anything. But I went to a meeting at the Pennsylvania Municipal League where Lycoming County talked about how they merged their water and sewer authorities, because then you have some savings in terms of,
administration,
all that, yes, stuff, yeah. All that kind of stuff. So, that would ruffle some feathers if it happened, but it's water's coming in and water's going out. We should
right.
We should probably look at that. I remember one time I was out on a walk. I don't even know why. I ended up coming down State Street, and I went into the Jefferson Society, and Joyce Savacchio was in there talking to some people. It was during the day, and I remember she said, don't sell the city's water system. I think she actually is right about that, because
you're talking about back in the day?
No, I'm talking about this is sometime within the last couple of years. Walked in there. Make sure that, because, it's leased right now. So
gotcha.
But what's happened elsewhere in Pennsylvania is there was that new state law that makes it easier for private water companies to come in and buy up water systems. And when we were talking about the budget, I kept saying, we're talking about the sewer rate increase that we're doing. Do you know how much sewer rates are going up elsewhere in Pennsylvania because of the water use that is controlled by private water companies?
Oh, wow.
I often felt like I was just like, there was a guy who posted on Facebook, said, and I mentioned this in my talk when I was leaving, that Alan really loves to hear herself talk. I'm like, no, I really don't love to hear myself talk. I'd rather have some other people on council talking and saying, hey, I read this. Can we try that? What about this?
Yeah, where's the contribution?
We had people complaining about the sewer rate increase, and this was just like an accidental.
Let's talk about that a second, okay? Because and we'll have the mayor on Friday, and he insists that the rate increases, like the sewer, like the stormwater, are not regressive. And I say it's the opposite. Because let's say you have a home on South Shore, mm-hmm. or you have a home, well, not, that's probably a bad example. Let's say you have a home on 4th and Mohawk.
Or 4th and Lincoln.
Or 4th and Lincoln, there you go. And you have a home on 4th and Holland. Mm-hmm. And you might even have the same amount of square footage or the same amount of roof space. But your home on 4th and Lincoln is going to be double or triple the value of the home on 4th and Holland. And my question is, why is it that both homeowners are paying the same fees, sewer fee, refuse, stormwater, etc.? And it just doesn't seem right to me to not raise taxes and to just keep raising fees is a regressive tax.
That I don't know that I'm prepared to answer that, but I will say that one of the things with the stormwater fee is that the nonprofits have to pay that too. So
that makes sense.
That makes sense. When we're talking about the sewer fee, and I want to tell you something I found out. This was truly by accident. The city has gone out for RFPs to upgrade now I'm going to have to make sure I'm not always saying our anymore because I'm not our anymore. I did that for a long time with the newspaper. Our. No, I'm not part of that. We. Upgrade the city's website to make it more user-friendly. Okay, yeah. So I happened to look at South Bend because I'm going kind of circling back to Marquette. Yeah. I was going out to Marquette a few years ago. I think it was before the primary. And so I had read that Mayor Pete had a great program on how to blight removal.
Okay.
So I thought, I think I read it in Kevin Cuneo's column. So I contacted Mayor Pete's office and I said, can I stop by and see you? And I got a few minutes with him. I have a video of him and me talking about blight. But so I've kind of looked at South Bend, just halfway to Milwaukee. I mean, I used to live in Indiana for a while. I lived in Fort Wayne. So I went and I looked at the South Bend website. Just because I was thinking, you know, he's not there anymore, but he was a technocrat, the right word.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure,
so if you were going to have a good website, you would think South Bend would have one. And in fact, the city and the county share the same building space. So I went and I looked at South Bend, and right on the homepage of South Bend website, it said, if you have trouble paying your sewer bill, we have a fund that can help you. And I kept saying to council members, if people are having trouble paying their sewer bills, could we have a fund? Now, the catch is that people pay for that fund with their sewer bills. So there's a small amount on your sewer bill. But couldn't it be done through philanthropy or something?
Sure.
Could that be done? I want to give you another example, which may seem a little bit... Well, it's also relevant, though. There was concern about people who live in the central city, you know, paying more than their share for parking fines because, you know, they may not be moving their cars or something. And this was another accidental thing. I think I was looking something up. I always like to see what other councils were doing in Pennsylvania. And I saw that the Reading Parking Authority had bought some vacant lots. And of course, now the people who are kind of anti-car might not be happy about this, but they created parking lots in the central city so people could have off-street parking. And so I thought, that's a creative idea. I think that's what's missing. Not that I could go and say, let's do the parking lots, let's do the fund, let's do this. But I wish that there were more of that innovation going on.
Well, didn't you say at one point that I think when you and Kathy came on, Kathy Schaaf, of that you thought that there would be more work sessions where you really got work done. Another idea that has come up is changing the code so that on an empty lot, or if you put a couple of them together, especially on the east side, that you could build garages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that a private concern, you know, a private citizen could buy the blighted lot and do 5 garages, and then you have people off the street and keep their house,
car. I am glad you mentioned that, too, because I think this probably also, I know this did not win me friends, because I did not think that council should have been voting for a pay increase, not for ourselves, but for the future, until we learned to work smarter. I thought it could have been accomplished, but I thought we needed to look at the actual way that council works. And I will say that, I had worked on, we would have committee reports, and I'm like, but we don't have any committees, so let's create committees. So I do see now I actually worked with Chuck on the last year, what committees could we set up? And there is a downtown core committee that's going to be meeting to talk about drinking in the park. So that's the way, that's what should happen. The new city planner, David Forrest, has only been on board a couple of months, but he's been very helpful to me in terms of how you approach work. We talked a lot about communication, and he said, you know, if these committees are set up, that will greatly improve communication. But that's how other councils work in terms of legislating. They go and they do the work at the committee level, and then they report back to the rest of council.
Can you talk to some of the scuff up that happened earlier last year about this generational things, people being called 70 somethings and millennials and all that?
I really do think that that was not wise. And there are some times when you think, maybe I'm the only one being irked about this, but, and I'm sure, you know, I am a reader, and I try and start my day more with, like, maybe doing some reflection. But I have to tell you,
more mindfulness.
So, but I read the Washington Post every morning. So this was in here December 28th. So I printed this out just because I wanted to be prepared. Opinion: ageism is one form of bigotry that never seems to get old. So it turns out that it wasn't just in Erie.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have kind of wrestled with that question. I talked with some friends from high school. I graduated from Villa. We graduated in 69. We've all turned 71 now. And we have
geez, you were kids in college during Kent State. Yeah. Holy smokes.
We have kids and grandkids actually at different generations within our group. One of my friends has a 27-year-old son. I have a 25-year-old grandson who's in the Marines. So one friend said, you know, younger people are looking and saying, you know, you haven't solved climate change. You know, we are going to be working forever. We'll never be able to afford a house. But on the flip side, I also think we can learn from each other. I tried to learn from the younger people on council. Jasmine Flores came in one time a couple of months ago with this great little snippet from the Sister Gus's Kids Cafe. And the kids from Sister Gus's Kids Cafe had been involved in the Fish Project, the Go Fish Project, and it was called the Wish Fish. So they wrote what they wished, and so many of those wishes were just so poignant. And Jasmine said she wanted to know what happened to the kids who wrote the Wish Fish. I think she said she was 10 years old when they put their wish up there.
Wow.
Kids were wishing that they wouldn't have to move. They wished that they could always have these nice teachers. And so I tried to find what happened to the Wish Fish. I haven't found out yet. A lot of those were, the fishes were, auctioned off to raise money.
Yeah.
And so the woman who worked on the Go Fish book thought that she might have some information, but I didn't hear back. And I suppose I should follow up on that. So I tried to be attuned to what it's like to be a younger person. But at the same time, I used to feel like, you know, if you wanted information, I can find this for you. Just acknowledge that I'm not old and frail and I still want to contribute. I just read some interesting stuff about intergenerational communities.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Joel, you're going to laugh because I am going back to Marquette. Marquette was a big influence on me.
Sure.
Marquette students are living in an assisted living facility. They are able to get an apartment at a pretty affordable rate, like $300 or $400 a month. They take yoga with the elderly folks. And a friend of mine who lives in suburban New York City said that the same kind of intergenerational living is happening with, I think she plays the organ a lot at convents where they actually have space, so they're, you know, having people come in and live there. So
That just sounds very, very creative, outcome-based solutions.
Yeah.
I want to because I'm down to like 4 minutes, and I have to ask you.
Okay.
So you're feeling like you could be additive to the conversation, but maybe not in this lane of politics. But I want to broach with you what is coming up as a over and over again on these conversations here as our number one metric that we've got to fix, and that is city and metropolitan area, which is the whole county. Mm-hmm. Our population is in decline, and. Again, the mayor feels like that he's got the plan to boost population, and one of his goals is a 10,000 person increase by the end of his tenure. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that there has been, again, any rigor or any real work toward that end on the council side of things, toward, you know, making this place more attractive for population?
I think... Okay, let me say two things. One is, I think we have to be really careful about not discouraging development. We've had some developers come in, and I heard a council member say, well, we don't like the way this looks. Can you go back and redo this and maybe come back with new plans? That could be at some point. Maybe you do have design guidelines. You don't do it from the council seat and say, hey, we have a developer in here. And then I mean, another council member said, well, don't make him a saint. He's getting lured up. But nevertheless, he's putting some money in here. I want to tell you, very anecdotally, I think data is really important. We're going to have to track what's happening with Lurda. We're going to have to track with who's moving in here. The mayor has talked about retirees moving in here. He's not off about that. I was at the Y the other day, and I met a woman who was retired from a borough in Pittsburgh, and she said, we retired in Erie because my husband loves to fish. And so you're thinking, again, we're kind of back to the intergenerational thing. We all want the young people. I met, there's another woman when I volunteered at Little Leaves, which was a program at Frontier after I retired from the newspaper. She retired here from Florida. Their family was from Pittsburgh originally. Her husband loved Presque Isle. So that's so anecdotal. Two people aren't going to make the transformation that we need.
But it's
here.
Hands on deck, kind of?
It should be all hands on deck.
I mean, why can't we mark it as a senior living, you know, high quality senior living?
Yeah. And remote work.
Yeah.
Huge. We need to figure out about that. Get people back here.
When you think about ARP
30s.
Money, I mean, I don't know if it's all spent already, but. Boy, between the inclusive playbook and everything else that's out there, we need to be smart about all that stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So final question for Liz Allen here. What about the media and their role in the new Erie?
I talk to my friend Lisa Thompson all the time. She's been doing some great stuff in the Commons, but we don't have those regular letters to the editor where I think people are more thoughtful in letters to the editor. I mean, we have the newspaper has them on Sunday, but it's less toxic than social media. It's so much stuff that is not being covered. And I think back to this is way before Gannett gobbled up these papers. Journalism was all about we're going to do these big narrative reads, which are really good.
The
long form journalism, but we're forgetting about the process. And that's where some of this stuff is happening, where we need to have eyes or citizen journalism or whatever. I don't know what the solution is, but I make notes to myself about how can we do this? Can we use, are there models that other cities are using to help communicate what's going on?
It would be hard, I would think, especially on the print side, because Gannett is everywhere. I mean, I went to three different websites. They were all Gannett websites this morning.
They're all the same. And when I talk about Milwaukee, I went there. Same exact. It's Gannett. Every format is the same.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah, but it's something we need to talk about.
We do need to talk about. We're going to have you come back.
Okay.
You're going to continue your writing for the Reader, right?
Right.
And of course... whatever that lane takes you in this next chapter.
Can I shake your hand here?
Absolutely.
I don't know. Can you shake your hand on the radio? Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for really stimulating conversation, because think about this. If this is, you're raising these questions, other people are doing the same thing. I think we can get to somewhere where we can we got to have start seeing solutions.
Yeah,
some
we need to see a solution. And we're so passionate about the town, and we can feel like we're right at the cusp of it.
Yes.
But unfortunately, again, my opinion, I feel like the public sector is not ready for prime time just yet.
And one of the things that also started me thinking about this was we started talking about Philadelphia. I talked to the Jefferson Educational Society's cohort a couple of weeks ago, yeah, before I quit, and I asked, what do we need to do? And that was one of the suggestions from somebody in that group was look outside of Erie, so that because we're so – I love Erie. I always say we're very parochial in the good sense and in the bad sense.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
My husband was in the hospital. He had his hip replaced. The nurse comes in and says, where'd you go to high school? And Eric said, Cardinal Stepanak in White Plains, New York. She immediately turned away from him and started talking to me. Where'd you go to high school? So
that's exactly how this rolls.
Yeah.
Liz Allen, the former city council president, thank you for your service. Again, it's a lot to put your hat in the ring. And you did it, and you ran, you won again. There's a lot to be proud of there, Liz. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jules.
All righty. You are tuned to Talk Erie and the Joel Natale Show on a Tuesday.
You've been listening to the Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast from TalkErie.com. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher and get involved by emailing joel@TalkErie.com.